To celebrate the 50th anniversary of Woodstock, WDIY presents a special rebroadcast of an interview with Richie Havens. The interview, hosted by Steve Aronson, offers a look at a Woodstock performer and a glimpse back to the historic concert in 1969.
Sunshine laughs upon my face, and the secret of the shining puts me in my running place.
The WDIY microphones with Richie Havens from Brooklyn, New York, and one of the premier performers from the golden age of folk that you listen to on Folk Classics every Monday night. And we're going to ask some questions that I think some of our listeners might want to learn about. Well, you've recorded over 30 albums, but it's a couple of live performances back then that I'd like to talk to you about. And one is historic, and that would be Woodstock in 1969. I think some of our listeners might know a little bit about it. Some of them might have even been there. I think they'd like to hear from you what that day was like.
That whole era between 1945 and 1955 was the sort of development of our musical voice, and leading up to 69, which was the beginning of our political voice. The whole concert is something that I personally expected to have happened in the 50s, and tell you the truth. We had all the guys on radio putting these shows together where they'd have 20 guest artists from the radio. I mean, all these young guys, they get up and sing two songs. And, you know, Alan Freed, you know, I actually went to a couple of those shows.
The Brooklyn Paramount.
Yep. And it inspired me as well, you know, because here was a lot of young people singing songs. And notwithstanding, you're moving towards something that we weren't even sure of, you know, what we were looking for. At best, we were looking for respect of our ideas. So that day when I flew over all those people down in that valley, and I flew in by a helicopter that was one of the little glass bubble helicopters, and we got to get it there first because there wasn't a road to get anybody there and with their equipment that wasn't blocked. So they found this farmer down the road with his own helicopter. And he's the guy who actually brought us in. We had the least instruments and the least people. So that's how they convinced me to get in there and go over. I really wanted to be over there because from what we were hearing, stuck at the hotel 7 miles away, was that there were a lot of people out there. No one really said how many. They said more than they've ever seen before, I'll tell you that. So what happened was we landed backstage, and Michael Lang had come up to me. He says, Richie, would you go on now? I said, go on now? You mean first? He goes, yeah, you know, would you? I went, are you kidding? You want these guys to kill me on stage? The concert's 6 hours late. They're going to kill me. So I really felt strange because I was supposed to be on fifth, and I could prepare myself for that, you know, looking at these and more than a half a million people the first day. That's the first myth that was changed by everybody who was there because they knew. And the press had their job of cutting that in half. So it was a quarter of a million the first day. But it was more than a half a million the first day. And I saw these people through the bottom of this helicopter looking through the glass, and I went, this is it. They can't hide us anymore. We are now above ground. We now have a voice. that they have to listen to. And so 520,000 people later, there I was going on stage first. And it was completely amazing.
And you were on for quite a while.
Yeah, I was on for four times as long as I was supposed to be. we were supposed to do like 35, 40 minutes. And I did my 35, 40 minutes, and I walked off the stage, and the guy goes, Richie, no one's here yet. Could you do four more songs? No problem. Okay. So now that I was over my total fear that they were going to throw me off the stage for being a late Joe, they didn't care. The people really loved being there, and many of them had been there for a whole week before it started and camping out. And here it was. I went back and did the four more songs, and I walked off again, and they said, Richie, four more? Well, this happened six times in a row. So I ended up 2 hours and 45 minutes later coming back out for the last one because the army had come in to take over bringing the bands in. And that's a little trivia you could have.
The army? They actually helped you guys?
If it wasn't for the army, there would not have been a Woodstock because they brought the Hueys that brought every instrument and every amplifier to that field. And the bands. And they could transport three bands and three bands' equipment in one helicopter. And they had two or three of them out there. And they shuttled everyone back and forth.
Well, considering some of the messages you guys were delivering, that's kind of surprising to me.
It is. And it's surprising to a lot of people. What you have to think is that, in fact, we as a generation were being put upon and labeled many things that we weren't at the time. First of all, we weren't hippies. That wasn't even heard of yet. that was a word also made up by a newspaper person. And of course, the definition of it was also made up by the newspaper person. And so they didn't exist. We were not anti-war. We were pro-peace. That's a big difference. And so they made us into look like anti-war, anti-soldiers, and without us thinking about it, they're going, how crazy can these guys be? We don't like the war, the soldiers. The soldiers are our brothers and sisters that are dying over there.
It's the same arguments that are being made today, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, they try to make everybody unpatriotic who won't go on the line there, and they're still trying. And it doesn't work, because everything is obvious now.
As you completed your set finally at Woodstock, you actually wrote a song right on the stage.
Yes, it was such an experience, because when you see me coming out on the movie, this is actually the last song in the set. You see me walking away and then coming back on, and I came back on for the seventh time. So here I am, sitting on the stool, and I realize I sung every song I knew. I sang every song I knew. I couldn't think of a song to sing. That's why it has such a long intro with the guitars and the conga drum. It was me trying to figure out what the heck I'm going to sing. So I didn't revert to doo-wop. I just opened my mouth and freedom came out. And because I realized this was the freedom my entire generation was looking for.